first case on our calendar is 082408, H1HIN LLC versus Cuyahoga County Board of Revision. Mr. Kulik.
Good morning. May it please this honorable court, my name is Daniel J. Kulik. I will argue this case this morning on behalf of the appellant, the Bedford Board of Education. At this time, I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Your honors, this appeal is not a case involving a factual dispute. It is not a case involving the weighing of conflicting testimony, either of factual or of expert testimony. It is a case of applying the undisputed facts to the established law. The BTA, and even the parties at times, refer to the two sales of the same property in this case. This is really a misnomer. These two sales are of two different properties, as is shown in the undisputed evidence. You have the so-called first sale, where the purchase agreement was signed in September of 2003. It was for $4.9 million between Tops Supermarket and JBK. It involved two parcels, permanent parcel 812-16005 and permanent parcel 812-16026. It involved 36.9695 acres. And it involved an office building sitting vacant for 2 years with no lease in place. The second sale, which was the purchase agreement signed between February and April of 2004, for $7.4 million, was between JBK and HIN LLC. That involved one parcel, 812-16005. It involved 34 acres of land, and it involved a parcel with a 15-year triple net lease in place with U.S. Bank. The key time for valuation, pursuant to 571519D, and this court's pronouncements in Freshwater versus Belmont and Olmsted Falls Village versus Cuyahoga County Board of Revision, cited in our brief, is the tax lien date, 1-1-2004 in this particular case.
The first sale that happened actually sort of started its genesis was a couple months before that with the bank that was going to buy the property outright, is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And if you had not had the second sale and you just had the bank buy the property outright, was there any trade-offs or leasebacks or anything with that original proposal that would make it not a true market value?
No, Your Honor, there was nothing else.
So you had that original value between a willing buyer and a willing seller, and then you had all these permutations where they decided not to buy it. The second group came in, agreed to buy it if they would lease it, and now you have a lease when you have the second sale on the property.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And even though they were contemplating the lease at the time the first property actually ended up being sold, the original price between the buyer and the seller had never changed, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And the original agreement had no lease. Keep in mind, the original agreement was between U.S. Bank and Tops. Since U.S. Bank was buying it, they certainly didn't have any reason to lease it.
So the lease, despite the fact that the lease had actually been negotiated before the first sale occurred, there was no change in the price that was reached before the lease was contemplated.
That's correct.
And the second sale now had the lease attached to the property.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So there is a true intervening lease.
Oh, yes.
And counsel, I just want to make sure on the lien date of January 1st, 04, was the lease in effect?
Yes. If based on the record, you will see the original lease is dated November 1, 2003. It was amended on December 11th, 2003. And at the commencement date of that lease was the date that the JBK took possession and ownership of their property, which was at the latest, 12/30/2003. And I say at the latest because the deed was signed December 23rd, but the actual filing of the deed didn't take place till 12/30. But no matter which date you utilize, the lease was in effect as of 1/1/04. And again, The actual property on 1104, which is the tax lien date, was one parcel. The parcel that's involved in this case, 812-16005, it's 34 acres, and it's with the triple net lease in place. Of the two sales, the only sale that had the same elements as what was in place on January 1, 2004, was the second sale. In effect, what the appellee is asking in this case is that it doesn't want the value of the lease, which encumbered this property, to be included in fixing either the fair market value of the property or to be taxed on that amount. But as this court said in Cummins versus Franklin County, encumbering that property constitutes the owner's method of realizing the value of the property. That's the difference. This is the same situation as the Berea case that was before this court. It's the same situation as Cummins. And for this reason alone, I believe the BTA erred in not putting the property on for 1104 and 1105 at the sale price of the property that was there as of 1104 at $7.4 million. But there's a second reason I think there's a
the
problem.
The difficulty I have with that position, Mr. Kolick, is that the sale didn't occur until April. So how could you go back to a valuation on a sale that hadn't occurred?
Well, this is how we would do that, Judge. First of all, as this court has held, oftentimes a sale even after tax lien date can be taken into account to fix the value as of the tax lien date. In this particular case, what you're talking about is what the BTA grabbed onto and said, look, on, and this is on page 9, paragraph 1 of its opinion. They said, what occurred in the market and or the property if the tenant made enhancements in the intervening 4 months could have significantly affected the value of the subject property, which is what you're mentioning here. But the evidence is undisputed. There was absolutely no change. As to the market, there was no testimony that the market had changed. In fact, the only testimony was from the appraiser for the property owner, who testified, and it's on supplement on page 37, and it's in the BTA transcript on page 31, line 19, there were no changes in the market between 03, the end of 03, and the sale in April of 04, and the appraiser conceded that.
Counsel, what does the statute say about the selling price being the best evidence of?
It's exactly what the statute says, Your Honor. The selling price is the best evidence of value, and I think that's what we have. So
and
I don't even think we need
it. Does that statute allow for a looking at a sale price that is after the tax lien date? Is that included in the statute?
The construction of this court is that you look at the recency of the sale, and you can use a sale after tax lien date, as long as that's not the only thing you look at. And that was the problem with what the BTA did. The BTA just looked at the recency of the sale and was sort of counting days back to see which one was closer to the tax lien date. This court, in opinion as recently as was reported yesterday in the Weber Sisters case, and I couldn't give it as an additional cite, it just came out yesterday, said you have to look more than just at the recency of the sale. In fact, I think this court stated in that case, proximity is not the sole factor affecting recency. And I think that is one of the problems with the BTA's decision.
Well,
in this case.
In that case, there was plenty of evidence that what the Weber sisters thought they bought and what they got were two entirely different things.
They
got taken to the cleaners by the seller.
I agree. But we have the opposite here, Judge. The market didn't change in our particular case, as noted. In fact, the BTA, in effect, held that the market didn't change because when it took off the smaller parcel, it used the sales price from April of 2004 to deduct off. So the BTA is acknowledging there's not a change in a market, or I wouldn't be able to use the sale in 2004, deduct it from the purchase price of the larger parcel to come up with a value.
Counsel, if we were to accept your position and reverse the decision of the BTA, would you agree that a remand for their consideration of whether the 2004 sale was arm's length and affected the price, that would be the way to do it, to remand them for consideration of that 2004 sale?
I don't believe it's necessary in this case, Your Honor, because of what I said. The undisputed testimony already said, and there was no dispute, that second sale was arm's length. That was conceded. But the undisputed testimony said there was no change in the market. The undisputed testimony showed there was no change in this building. Nothing.
But isn't it their prerogative, then, to determine whether they should accept the appraisal or revert to the county's valuation?
It would be their prerogative based on the evidence. They also have to follow the evidence. And if the evidence introduced below, which is what it was, the sale is arm's length, it's the same property that was there as of January 1, there's been no change in the market, no change in the property, there's nothing for them to decide. The evidence is before this court already.
Okay.
In fact, the BTA specifically found on page 4 in the second paragraph of its opinion that there were no physical changes to the property. Mr. Kuhn, who was the principal of the purchaser in the first sale and the principal of the seller in the second sale, specifically stated that there were no changes. In fact, Your Honor, on page 70 of the SUP, and I would quote, there were two questions proposed to Mr. Kuhn. First one is, were there any physical changes between the time of your purchase in December of 2003 and the time you sold it in April of 2004, which would warrant an increase in the purchase price by $2.5 million? Answer, other than the lease with U.S. Bank, no. Second question, would you attribute the entire increase to the U.S. Bank lease? Answer, correct. Your Honors, as I pointed out, the lease was in effect as of January 1. It was a written, binding lease.
Was there anything on January 1 that gave the, forgotten the gentleman's name you just
read? Mr. Kuhn, Your Honor.
Mr. Kuhn, the knowledge that he could make such a profitable turn on this property at that point. On January 1, did he already know? In other words, when he bought it from the bank, did he already have a purchaser in his pocket where he was going to flip this?
Your Honor, I don't believe there's any testimony in a record that would reflect that.
And one could also, I think, reasonably assume that if the bank understood that they could put a long-term lease on this, and I mean, the bank would have just purchased the property themselves if they had known they could turn around and with a lease flip it for a couple $1 million profit. They would have done it themselves.
Well, I guess I could speculate about that.
Really what's involved. It's speculation on the part of Mr. Kuhn when he makes this investment, apparently thinking, hey, with this lease, I think I can make a nice profit. But I'll bet he was a little surprised that he found a buyer that quickly.
Well, I don't know, Your Honor, and I'll tell you why. There is one indication in the record. If you look at the mortgage on page 278 of the SUP, this is the mortgage for the first sale. The mortgage was $5,570,000. Obviously, you had a mortgage company who felt this property was worth more than a 4.9 once you had that triple net lease in place. In fact, if you take normal mortgage terms, 75% mortgage to value, you run that through, curiously, it comes right to the 7.4 value that was involved here. So we do know we had at least one, not party, but one individual or one entity in this case who certainly believed that triple net lease greatly increased the value of the property.
Why wouldn't we have the, send it back for the BTA to consider issues like the $740,000 payment under the lease, the 22,000 jobs grants, the 5,000 moving expenses from the city, what effect those all had on the value of the property and whether that had any effect on it?
Judge, I don't believe they did for two reasons. One, they were part of the first, other than the 740 contribution, everything with Bedford was part of the first sale. So we already have that taken into account. All the 740 did is get you the triple net lease. I don't think that affected the value per se, except to the extent that someone was willing to come in to pay the square footage amounts they were, knowing they were going to receive the $740,000 tenant improvement contribution from the landlord. So again, I don't think there's anything to send it back to the BTA for, because I think the effect of that is clear. It generated the triple net lease that's part of this, which all became part of the second sale. Because keep in mind, that 740 was not paid by the second seller. That was paid by the first seller or the landlord. And that was already in place as of January 1.
Council, how far out should we let this concept go that you're advocating? We're 4 months here. Do you go 8, 9 months?
Your Honors, I don't know if
Do you go a year? I mean, when do you pay these taxes? The taxes don't get paid till...
Taxes are always a year behind, Judge.
So do you go out until the auditor makes the final calculation in the fall and sends out the tax bill?
Judge, I don't believe as a matter of law we can set a date, and that's why this court hasn't to date. But I think what becomes important is look at the date of the sale. Obviously, the further out you get, the less likely it's going to be reflective. But you look at the other testimony that comes in it. What's changed? In the Weber sister case, as you noted, the market changed. It fell apart. They lost tenants. Everything else occurred. That's what you have to look at. And in this particular case, first of all, we're close enough to that date. There's no change in the market. There's no change physically. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Kolick. Mr. Ray.
Mr. Chief Justice, Justices of the Court, may it please the Court, my name is Nicholas Ray of the law firm Siegel, Siegel, Johnson & Jennings. We represent the appellee property owner in this case. In this case, there really are not significant disagreements as it relates to the facts in this case. There was the earlier sale negotiated by U.S. Bank. There is no doubt, as Mr. Kolick indicated before the court today, that if U.S. Bank had completed that sale and decided to occupy the property, they were purchasing it for $4.9 million in an arm's length transaction. That arm's length transaction closed 2 days before the tax lien date. Now the lien, well, we say a week, let's say the 23rd of December, you know, a week before the tax lien date, there's a closing in this case. The property was reflective. There's no question that it's arm's length. There's no question that the $4.9 million is reflective of the value. It really is.
But the original sale price negotiated with the bank of $4.9 million did not change even when the lease was now attached, correct?
That's correct.
So the new owner that stepped in the bank's shoes said, I'll go ahead and buy it if you do the lease, but they didn't negotiate a higher price to buy it at.
They did not, Your Honor, and what the school board would have this board do in this case is really reverse 50 plus years of the court's precedent as it relates to the taxation of leasehold interests. Because there was no change in the property, again, the parties don't disagree. There's no question that the difference in value in this case is the lease. And is the lease real estate? If we look at the definitions of real estate, what's a building, what's a fixture, what's an improvement, what's a structure, all of those items that this court has wrestled with in property cases throughout the years, there's nothing that tells us that a leasehold interest or the value of the leasehold interest is real property.
We have some case law recently that says that if you've got a vacant building versus a leased building, that affects value. And while we've held that's not taxation on the leasehold itself, we have held that it makes a difference on what you buy and sell on the open market for is whether you have a long-term lease or not.
The court has looked at those cases with the long-term leases. And again, I think this court has certainly seen me here numerous times talking about those particular issues. And quite honestly, if you look at Berea, I mean, I think what practitioners have done, both before the school boards and for property owners before this court, has come forward and argue for distinctions to Berea. The simple fact of the matter, which there's no way to avoid, is that the court's application of Berea has become too broad. And this is the perfect case to see it. We have a lease here. There's no question the only difference in value is the leasehold interest. In those earlier cases, the court really didn't have a value associated with the leasehold interest. There was no way to say there's a leasehold interest here and its value is X. There's clearly a leasehold interest value here. The parties acknowledge the only difference in value in this case is a leasehold interest. Additionally, that leasehold interest takes into account the items Your Honor was talking about as it relates to the tenant improvements, as it relates to the incentives provided. And one other thing that is unique in this case is that when Mr. Kuhn agreed to purchase this property and agreed to the initial leases with U.S. Bank, there was an expectation of two buildings. So there was going to be the office building that's before the court today, and Mr. Kuhn was going to build for U.S. Bank a warehouse building. And that warehouse building, he had an expectation to receive money on that and profits. And U.S. Bank ultimately decided not to move forward with the warehouse building. The lease that encumbers the property in this case then, there was a settlement amongst the parties and the lease rate was changed. The lease rate was changed for a non-existent building, not the subject property. And so when we start saying, boy, we're going to ignore the leases, we're going to ignore what's really going on in real estate transactions, we set up a situation where we're taxing something other than real estate. The Board of Tax Appeals in this case found a recent arm's length sale that was negotiated on the open market. It closed 2 days within the tax lien date.
So that valuation would be what the sale was as of December 30th, and you think it's $4.9 million.
The $4.9, and then the Board of Tax Appeals adjusted. That included a two-acre parcel, which was going to include this warehouse that Mr. Kuhn was going to build for U.S.
And that's
Bank.
The tax lien date then as of 1/1/04.
Correct.
And then when does... In your view, when would the 7.4 value become effective?
Well, again, in our view, you can't ignore the realities that lease doesn't reflect just this real estate. It affects everything else. The Board of Tax Appeals never evaluated the $7.4 million sale. They quite honestly never...
Do you think they should have?
No. They have a recent arm's length sale.
That's the end of it.
2 days
of
the tax lien date. All right. There's the follow-up question as it relates to subsequent years.
Yes.
Now, the Board of Education.
Is that 05? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the Board of Education would ask this court to consider 05, but it failed to preserve.
Is that in 05. This record? 05, the tax lien date for 05?
There was no specific discussion in the record as it related to 05 in this case. There is the 04 sale.
So the only matter before us is the valuation for the lien date 1/1/04.
Right.
And nothing beyond that.
This court's jurisdiction is of course limited by the issues preserved in the appeal before this court.
And the question then of whether or not the $7.4 million should be a valuation for the property is a matter for another filing in another day.
At the moment, the Board of Education has a 2006 case pending in which they're arguing that $7.4 million.
Actually, with this property.
As it relates to this subject property, correct. The 2005 issue, was not preserved. The Board of Tax Appeals did not address, and it's not preserved improperly before this court.
When you suggested earlier that, I don't mean to misstate what you said, but I thought you said that the application of Berea is too broad, and this is the perfect case to change it. I guess I don't want to misstate what you said. I want to understand what you said, and I'd like you to expand on that.
Yeah, the facts in this case are the perfect implication. Now, what we really have here is 04. We have a sale 2 days before the tax lien date.
Yes.
The fact pattern that this court is presented with as it relates to, again, if it were to decide it has a jurisdiction over 05, or as we look forward to 06, the underlying lease. Now, in Berea, the court said, you know, we're going to overturn Ratner, and Ratner we used
really
to look at.
Really what Hank Berea said was that the statute, as Justice Pfeiffer was alluding, talks about valuing real property based on an arm's length transaction and determining fair market value from what a willing seller would accept and a willing buyer would pay. And that's really what Berea says.
That is, but this court's obligation, you know, as justices of the United States, or the promoters.
We're not in the United States Supreme Court.
As justices of the Ohio Supreme Court.
Some of us might get there.
Goes beyond simply applying the statute. You've got to look at how the statute fits within the constitutional framework of Ohio. And when you say, we're going to just tax real estate based upon recent arm's length sales, and you decide we're going to forget about uniformity, we're going to walk away from the idea of fee simple.
But
we'll
how would we do that, Mr. Ray, if the General Assembly has told us this is the method, and everyone, all the developers, all of the school, everyone was in, and this is the law that we promulgated, and this is what everybody in Ohio is on notice as to the method for valuing realty in our state.
Respectful.
So isn't the proper forum to do that? To ask the legislature to give us the opportunity to consider leases?
I do think there's the alternative of asking the legislature to do that, but this court has never shown that it's unwilling when a provision of Ohio law and its application would result in an unconstitutional taxation to say that the approach of that doesn't fit within the Ohio Constitution. When we have the case here, we've got the same property. It hasn't changed. The bricks and sticks are the same. It's the same building, nothing's different. And in a period of 4 months, because of a leasehold interest, which has never been held to be real estate, the value of the property changes this dramatically. And that lease isn't just a real estate lease. I mean, if we think about the Walgreens and the Walmart cases, that lease encumbered the property before it was built. That lease existed, it was for that property.
But doesn't that become reflective on a whole variety of factors, not just leases? Suppose the economy in Ohio gets really hot and everybody's property value goes up. Or if it gets really a little worse than it is today, everybody's value goes down. Nothing to do with leases. So values change.
Values
and
change.
Willing sellers and willing buyers still negotiate for purchases.
In 90 to 95% of the cases, a broad application of Berea that says when the property sells and it's recent in arm's length, that's reflective of the value of the property for taxation purposes. What we're really dealing with here is not the bulk of the transactions. What we see here is a transaction based upon a lease that reflects the value of property that was never built, that reflects incentives, that reflects tenant improvements. And when you say, boy, across the board, just across the board, we're just going to say if there's a lease there and the property sells, we're not going to look any farther. I mean, when you get that broad, things like this, where you have, again, non-real estate components, parties do a number of things. The market, in many cases, is not clean.
Are you asking us to look at the lease in this case?
Well, I don't. If you're going to consider the $7.4 million sale, you have to look at the lease. And at that point, the Board of Tax Appeals didn't, because it made a factual determination that the recent arm's length sale was.
Are you asking us to look at the lease in this case?
In this case, I don't believe the court has to. I mean, I think this case is pretty easy. I mean, I think when I was here last time, Chief Justice Moyer commented that particular case was one the court may not have accepted on appeal if it had its choice. This to me doesn't feel significantly different than that. We have a question of whether the Board of Tax Appeals, all the arguments you heard from the Board of Education today, all the questions about the facts were all properly before the Board of Tax Appeals. There's nothing new here. The Board of Tax Appeals has already considered everything that the court has before it. It made a factual determination as to value in this case.
So, Counselor, Mr. Wright, the lease, do you disagree that the lease was in effect for the December 03 sale?
It was in effect. It was modified December 11th.
Okay, so it goes back to, it was a component in the 4.9 configuration for the sales price of that property. It was known that this lease was in place.
It was known to Mr. Kuhn because, again, U.S. Bank negotiated the purchase agreement. They decided rather than owning, they would lease it.
Right.
And entered into agreement with Mr. Kuhn. Mr. Kuhn could have said no. Mr. Kuhn could have said, that number's not good enough for me. U.S. Bank could have said, I have this purchase agreement for $4.9 million, but when I lease this property to you, it's going to be so valuable as real estate that I'll assign you the $4.9 million purchase agreement for $1.5 million. I mean, again, any of those types of transactions could occur. If there was value to be realized from the property, U.S. Bank certainly isn't the position of giving away over $1 million. Mm-hmm. You have a willing buyer, a willing seller. There's a million different ways to structure that transaction to realize the value. It was structured in the open market. It reflects the value of the property on the tax lien date.
Mr. Ray, the recency argument, the determination of the recency of the sale, I mean, are you saying that the tax lien date should cut off the consideration of the second sale? Are you saying that it should be any sale that goes to the point of the lien date? So I don't think the statute says that.
No,
and my concern is that we have two different sales here where there does seem to call into question which is showing the true value of the property. And the BTA ought to have looked at both of them to determine which one was really the recent.
The BTA, again, relying upon this court's decision in Dublin Sawmill Properties, its own long line of standing cases, Ballantrae Investments, the additional cases cited in our briefs, has really looked at the recency, meaning the closest to the tax lien date, whether that's
before or after. We don't actually say it that way, though, do we, in those cases?
Certainly the Board of Tax Appeals does.
But are we talking about cases where there is a second sale so close to the lien date?
That there are competing sales, and the closest sale to the tax lien date is the sale that reflects the value as of the tax lien
date. So you would have us articulate that as the rule here, that
yeah,
it's the...
There's been no change. Now, recency only works, and this idea of being close to the tax lien date, if there isn't an underlying change in the property. So something happens to the property. If they bought this on December 30th and something dramatically happened to the property in some way, you know, there's a shift. Something happens. Now, it's pretty tough with 2 days to come up with a good fact pattern where that
right,
works.
But then shifting it around, let's say the first sale was completed in September and the second sale was January 3rd. Under your rule, then, the January 3rd date would be the one that would be...
Would be the one that would be utilized, and we'd be here talking more about how that lease isn't a real estate lease. I mean, it's a real estate lease, it's a settlement of potential litigation, it's tax incentives, it's above and beyond the lease of real estate, and a broad application of Berea that says,
was all of that in,
on and don't look, doesn't
was
work.
Was all of that in evidence?
The changes to the leases,
the fact that there was potential litigation and
all that was part of Mr.
and
Kuhn's deposition.
The bank said, look, we'll make our dispute go away by giving you a sweetheart.
We'll up the lease to make you to.
Which probably worked from a tax standpoint for the bank and worked great for your client because instead of having to pay full boat on a settlement, it got to
right. The other ultimate question we don't know and that isn't in the record, what was his expectation interest in the warehouse that was never built? Now, we have it in the lease and we have a subsequent sale. I mean, it's not clear. I mean, Mr. Kuhn is definitely being subsidized for the loss of his expectation interest in building and leasing this property.
I'm curious in terms of an overview and looking at these things. You suggest we've taken the holding in Berea too far. Were you on the Meyer case? I can't remember.
I was, Your Honor.
So that's one that you think we went too far on.
Well, I think in the Meyer case.
Well, which cases? Cases should we look at and say, well, maybe we followed Berea to its illogical conclusion? I assume if you were... I was thinking you were on the Meyer case.
Meyer was not a sale. I mean, Meyer was more of a question of the discretion of the Board of Tax Appeals
right.
in that case.
And the dispute there really was different in that Meyer wanted to use some Kmart boxes, which are sort of dead horses in the market.
Which boxes are the right boxes to use in an appraisal? From a sales standpoint, the question becomes, and again, it's just a It's just an issue of it can't be a blanket approach. And this is the case that shows you, if you have a blanket approach, you're taxing something other than real estate. And you run into uniformity problems. I'm now going to tax this property based upon non-real estate factors. And as a result, the property next door, similar circumstances, again, almost like the court's discussion in Higbee with the use of the sales. You know, if you could have two identical properties valued differently, you've got a uniformity problem.
Well, I want to take you back to Justice Lanzinger's question of shouldn't this go back? Because while you say we've followed Berea to an illogical conclusion in some cases, you really want us to apply Berea in a very hard and fast case. Our sale, your sale, that you want to use is the most recent, so apply Berea and say end of story.
I don't think it has to be a hard and fast approach here on the first sale, Your Honor. I think if you look at the specifics of the sale, the property was listed on the open market for an extended period of time. There was negotiation between unrelated parties. There's no compulsion. There's no duress. There's no question of anything underlying with the property that reflects the $4 million sale. That's the case where Berea works. I mean, that's the case. That's 90%+ of what's going on.
So for today, you like Berea?
No, I wouldn't say that, Your Honor. I wouldn't say that at all. But I think the broad application of Berea, I think if you look at the application and you say, what do the facts tell me about the transaction? And my concern with Berea is that if the court or the Board of Tax Appeals puts the blinders on and says, you know what, we don't look outside of these blinders.
Okay.
Look outside the blinders.
Then wouldn't Justice Lanzinger be right and it should go back and say, okay, look at the subsequent sale, look at the lease, look at what was involved other than just a pure real estate transaction in the lease, and you've got these two competing things. And
again, all the Board of Tax Appeals has at that point is the record before it. And if there's a remand in this case, it's not a remand to take additional evidence. There's a burden upon the appellant at the BTA, which was the property owner, to come forward with evidence of value.
So we've been talking about things here today that they can't even consider if it went
back. That burden was met.
Right.
You know, if you look at that sale, they've advocated for it. Once the burden's met, it shifts to the appellee to show that sale's not reflective of value. There's no evidence here. It's recent, it's arm's length. If you look at it, there isn't any underlying question. They had the ability to depose Mr. Kuhn. His deposition was there. I mean, there's nothing that uncovers. And that's, again, where I'm saying, Berea, look at the transaction. If you look at that transaction, the first one, there's no question there.
You've used your time, Mr. Ray.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Kolick, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honors. Your Honors, in effect, the appellee is asking this court to reverse Berea, AEI Net Lease, CC Cleveland, our whole line of cases. Secondly, in response to Justice O'Donnell's question, 2005, I disagree with counsel, 2005 is before this court. Under Revised Code 5715.19d, there's a continuing complaint. We don't have the ability, the Board of Education, to file a complaint for 2005. It's continuing. And this court does have, and the BTA did have before it, to 2005 year, because it's part of that same triennium, 2003, 2004, 2005. Your Honors, every commercial property, almost, is purchased for what it can generate. I mean, that's going to be in every case. I mean, that's why these appraisers use an income approach. What can this generate to value the property? Clearly, a property that has a lease in hand is going to be better than two in the bush out there, and you're going to find a buyer who's going to be willing to pay more for that property.
There's a previous question raised. What limit is there on the post-lien date considerations?
Judge, I think that has to be left up to the individual cases, to have the individuals come before the court and say, look, this is too far out because this changed. We lost all these tenants. The economy tanked. That's why there was a difference between the tax lien date and what I purchased.
But wouldn't the Board of Tax Appeals need to have some standard from us?
Judge, I don't know if we can set a standard, and here's the reason why. We're trying to guess what the economy is going to do, what an area is going to do. It could be different in Cleveland. You could have fixed values that may be good for 5 years as opposed to down in Columbus where they're rising and falling. That's why I think you've got to look at each individual case, and I think that's probably why the court hasn't set a hard line so many months before, so many after. If anybody, that would be up to the legislature to set some standard.
Although looking at Berea and looking at what the BTA did here, the recency, the decision that they made was the arm's length sale that was closest to the lien date. What's wrong with that?
Well, I'll tell you what's wrong with that, Your Honor. Here's the problem with that. What are you going to do, hypothetically, if you get one December 31 and one January 2nd? You can't even judge the recency. And the other thing that's wrong with it is you got to look at the changes that occurred between the sale, between the September 2003 sale and January 1, and you also look at the changes, if any, between January 1 and the April sale. That's what we have to look at. You can't just take the closest sale, as this court noted in Weber. You can't just look at the temporal aspects of it. So on behalf of the Bedford Board of Education, we request that the court place this on the tax duplicate at the second sale price to $7.4 million for 2004 and 2005.
Thank you. Mr. Kolick. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.